T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
List. Who makes the cut? Who gets into the top five? Who becomes the official greatest athlete in Bay Area sports history? Get your submissions ready. The debate starts Monday on 957thegame.com. Apparently what we're doing is each show is having one member of their show release their top 10 each day. So day one, I think it's me at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then it's going to be Bonte for the middays and then Damon for the afternoons. And then day two, you get where we're going here. It'll be like Lowe, Steiny, and Kolsky or Ratto, you get the idea. I put my top 10 list together. I sent it in last week. I got a ton of pushback. I think I'm defining this a lot differently than other people, but I don't know. 8 o'clock is when I'm revealing my list. So the haters and the trolls, feel free to come on out. Would love to talk to you. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning and welcome to your 8 o'clock hour of Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Let's get some help onto the show. Three-time NBA champ, former Chicago Bulls point guard, BJ Armstrong with us here on 95.7 The Game. BJ, we need your help. We were just having a conversation about the biggest movies to blockbuster on 4th of July weekend, right? That's the only criteria, the stuff that comes out on July 4th. And Independence Day is obviously in there. And that led into a conversation of Will Smith versus Denzel Washington. Will Smith with lots of blockbusters, Denzel with just a long list of really solid movies. We're all over the place on this one. We can't figure it out. If you got to make the call between Will Smith and Denzel Washington, where are you going?
Tell him.
Wow, that's a big one. I'm a fan of both. But I got to go with my guy, Denzel. You know, Denzel, that's my guy. So I'm just going to, you know, you're going to flip the coin up and, you know, I'm comfortable either way, but if I had to choose, I'm going to go with Denzel.
So, and now BJ, if you're, is that just based on movie versus movie, or is there a case to be made for Will Smith, the musician, and Will Smith having his own television, you know, sitcom where he was a star? I mean, if you're going total entertainer, does Will get points added or taken away, or is it just different categories?
Well, I think there's different categories. You know, they're both in the entertainment industry, but you know, Will Smith has had a marvelous, you know, career in what he's done, not only in movies, but you know, you got to take in his, you know, his music career and the things that he's done. So TV work. So you know, he's right there. I mean, you can't go wrong with either. I mean, you're talking about, you know, two of the elite in their fields. And but if you had to choose, you know, Denzel and the movies he's had has really kind of stuck with me emotionally in a way. And but you know, they both had great careers.
BJ, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm in the same church, sit in the same pew, and you could even sit on my lap if you like. I'm with you with Denzel. But let's talk about something that everyone's not quite sure on. That's this NBA season. Seeing the way what's going on, you're hearing different guys like Dame and First Take. You hear Stephen A. come out and saying, hey, guys are going to be able to follow protocol. This thing is not going to be able to have success. Do you see this thing having success? And yeah, guys might deviate a little bit, but do you see this thing seeing this thing through? Do you think we're going to get through this bubble situation?
Well, it certainly looks that way. And, you know, when you have an opportunity to bring a group of people together, in which we're discussing here, you know, you got to deal with the problems that come with it. And I think what we're all discussing here is saying, you know, we're going to deal with some issues. And first and foremost is the health and safety of these players. And I think to be expected, there will be players who, whether they, you know, come already and contract COVID-19, and there will be injuries, and there will be things that will occur. So I think the NBA has thought out this plan. I think they've kind of thought out everything that they could possibly think going into it. But as you guys know, things happen, and where there are human beings, there are going to be problems. There are going to be situations that arise that we say we didn't anticipate that. But you got to give the NBA credit for trying, for what they're doing, for organizing it, and working with so many people to try to pull this off. And we'll see how this plays out. But certainly, it's a daunting task, and one in which the NBA is taking on the challenge. And we'll see how it finishes up.
NBA champ BJ Armstrong joining us here on 95.7 The Game. What characteristics do you think define a team that will have success in this scenario? There's going to be no fans. There's going to be no travel. There's going to be no home court advantage. A lot of people I've talked to think that really hurts the Milwaukee Bucks, that they're not going to have any home court advantage whatsoever. Who do you see, or what characteristics should we be looking for that will define success given the situation?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, more than anything over this time, I've spent a lot of time just talking to coaches on what they think this is going to look like, and how they're going to play. And the big thing is, we must remember, guys, is that, they only have 3 weeks really to prepare for this. So, I think it's virtually impossible to get yourself in basketball condition in 3 weeks. Some players will be in great shape. Some players will come back in better shape. And the off season is at best a very unusual off season. It's not your off season where guys can just traditionally go out and play and do the things they normally do to get ready for an NBA season. So in saying all of that, I think the team that figures out how to defend, I think if you can make a stop and at least control that part of the game, whether you have shot blockers out there or whether you have guys who can defend and not have to double team, so forth and so on, I think that gives you a significant advantage, and it allows you to play advantage basketball, four against three, three against two, two against one. And the most important thing, I think the game will revert back to what the game resembled in the 90s. I think there will be more low post plays because of the conditioning of the players. I don't think the players will be able to play and sustain that level at that pace that we've now come to watch or to view currently at this pace and space. So I think there will be more emphasis now on just trying to get stops. And then I think on the offensive end, I think instead of seeing so much isolation basketball, I think you're just going to throw it into the post, let that player work, or hopefully that player is good enough to get double teamed, which will give you an opportunity to throw it out, a la, let's say, the old Houston Rockets with Hakeem Olajuwon.
BJ, I'm interested in your thoughts on the watchability aspect of this, because if I have one concern, it would be that you've got 13 teams now that home court and seeding doesn't matter as much. You've got 13 teams almost treating it, I'm talking about the 8 seeding games, like a ramp up, in essence, somewhat like a preseason. And then you've got, let's say, the other 7 to 9 teams that are just going full out to try and maybe get a playoff spot or at least get a play in. How do you see those two things intertwining and affecting the watchability of it?
Well, having conversations with players that will be participating in this, I think the big thing is, I think the mindset is, yes, we are coming there to ramp up and do those things, but this is a new normal. And the truth of it is that these players aren't in condition to go out there and execute that. And it's going to take time before they can go out and actually play. I think mentally, you're saying, yeah, we have to go out there and play and try to get into the eighth spot. But physically, there's no way. There's no player that's going to come down there and be ready to play for 40-plus minutes or so, whatever's needed to play at that level that we're discussing here. So I think it's going to take a collective effort. I think these coaches are going to have to shorten the time that players are on the floor. Normally you try to get an 8 to 10 minute run from your starters. I think that will be reduced to 4 to 6 minutes, especially initially, because they're just not in playing condition. Where are they going to play these games at that level in this environment? So I think there's a lot more going on mentally on what we think it could look like, but we have to remember these players have been off for a while. I don't really think this is really like a restart. I just think it's a new season. It's a new season under a new environment, new rules, and I think everything will be new, and I think it's going to take some time for these players to get adjusted to it. You know, players have routines. Players have routines of how they play on the road, how they play at home, and now we're here playing in a bubble. So I think it's going to take a little time. I think it's going to take at least 8 to 10 games for these players to figure out, you know, how this is going to be played, how we're going to play, how the coaches are going to coach, and get a feel. And I think the coaches have to get a feel for what kind of condition their team and their players are in.
BJ, with that being said, under these current conditions, if you're a player, one, would you play now or would you refuse to? That's one. And second of all, when you're talking about a post player, it's talking about players aren't able to go to distance right now because not in shape. What teams does that hurt? If you're looking at teams that depend on one guy or depend on two guys, what teams does this hurt right now when this thing start up?
Well, you know, I kind of have to take a look. I mean, I've never seen anything like this, especially at the NBA, at the NBA level. You know, so my only reference to what this is going to look like and who it's going to really have an advantage for would be the collegiate level. And in college basketball, you have most of the teams that advance, they have a pretty deep team. So I would venture to say that probably youth will be served in this tournament because, you know, when you're young, your body adjusts a lot quicker than it does as you get older. So I think teams like Denver, they're young and they're deep. I think that gives them an advantage in a situation like this because they can play a lot of different guys, and their jump and their fall off from their second unit to their first unit isn't that significant. And so I think teams like that will have an advantage. You know, when you look on paper, you know, I got to believe that the Clippers, if everyone shows up, they have like 3 or 4 guys that can score 20 points a game. So you can always keep a score on the floor and play some semblance or some type of team basketball. And Doc Rivers is a terrific defender. But I think the teams that are young, I think the teams that are athletic, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Boston Celtics suddenly made a run just because of Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and the young guys that they have, you know. So the Toronto Raptors could be one. So there are a lot of teams. The Memphis Grizzlies, I could see those guys with Ja Morant just having so much energy. I mean, his body and his athleticism, I think he will respond a lot quicker than guys who are over 30 at this point in these conditions. So, but I'm just as interested as anyone else. But if I had to choose one team, I would probably go with the Denver Nuggets.
3-time NBA champ BJ Armstrong with us here on 95.7 The Game. Stephen A. Smith was on First Take earlier this week, and he said he thinks, and it's just his opinion, but he thinks it might be a bit of an issue for this many guys, young, healthy, good-looking, rich, to spend this much time in a bubble without, shall we say, female companionship. He made the case that that could be a bit of an issue, people trying to sneak people in, different things happening. It was a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I think he was trying to make an interesting point as well, and it's reasonable. We talked to Matt Barnes about it yesterday. He made some great points on it as well. I'm not going to ask you to talk about the guys in today's NBA, but like, if your team's from the 90s, if that version of the NBA was in this bubble, how do you think that would have played out?
That's really funny. You know, I really don't know, and it makes me laugh.
You do. You probably just don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, you know, it's like one of those things that, you know, it's like, really? Are we really going here? But since you asked the question, I'll give you my best answer. I really don't know. I think, you know, I've been on good teams, I've been on bad teams, and I've been on, you know, championship caliber teams. And I have to believe if you are on a championship run, that you're going to do what you need to do to make that run. And that's the difference. And, you know, there are, you know, I could see Stephen A's point, and we're here, and we could chuckle at it and laugh at it. But you know what? The one thing I will always say about a player in my playing days is that players always adjust. And every year the NBA makes rule changes. And I remember when the game went from hand-checking to non-hand-checking, I remember, like, how we're going to play like that. And everyone was up in an uproar. But players adjust. And so here's another situation that, you know, players have their different routine. And you know, who knows? You know, I'm not here to say who's doing what. But players will adjust. Players will do what they have to do. And like they always do, you know, they will make the proper adjustments to do whatever it is they need to do to get into their routine. So, you know, like I said, this is a lot. And this is a lot for these players to have to go down there and perform, because that's basically what they have to do. You know, it's more than just an experiment. They have to go down there and perform, play, and do things in a different manner. But, you know, this COVID-19 has made everyone have to adjust. And this is just one that we'll have to get used to and be part of our new normal.
Great stuff, as always. Three-time NBA champ, former Chicago Bulls point guard, B.J. Armstrong, so generous with his time here on 95.7 The Game. Thank you, B.J. That was awesome, man. Have a great holiday weekend.
All right, you guys, too. You guys stay safe, be well, and thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on. B.J. Armstrong, ladies and gentlemen. Nice guy. Do we have the audio of Dame Lillard talking yesterday about some of the concerns he has with players down in the Orlando bubble?
Yeah, we got it here.
Fire when ready.
My confidence ain't great, because you telling me you're going to have, you know, 22 teams full of players follow all the rules? Like, when we have 100% freedom, everybody don't follow all the rules. So, I mean, I don't have much confidence, but hopefully, you know, it'll be handled to a point where, like, we're not putting everybody at risk or in a dangerous position.
That's Dame Lillard, starting with "my confidence ain't great" when he was asked whether or not everyone was going to be able to follow the rules at the bubble in Orlando. He went on to say, and this is why you love Dame Lillard. This is what makes the town proud. This right here is why Portland fans absolutely go crazy for this guy. Quote, hold on, I want to find the good one. All right, there it is. Quote, "I know they're going to be activities for us and all that stuff, but I mean, I'm going to be chilling. I feel like there's still a possibility for something to spread within that bubble, just with so many people doing so many different things that we've got to follow to be safe, even though we're not exposed to the public. So for me, it's going to be this. What time is practice? What time can I get in the weight room? What time can I get some shots up? What's the plan for game day? And then I'm going to be in my room. I'm going to have my PS3, my PS4. I'm going to have my studio equipment, my mic, my laptop. I'm going to have all my books. That's it, man. I'm going to be in the room, chilling." JD, we talked about this the other day. Memphis is currently the 8th seed, and then 3.5 games back, you find Portland, you find Sacramento, and you find Zion Williamson and the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, I think Portland's got the toughest schedule of the group, but a veteran like Lillard with that mindset and that approach going in, Blazers are probably going to be a real tough out, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. And not only him, but also C.J. McCollum and getting Nurkic back and getting Collins back. I know not having Ariza, I think, is going to hurt him. But yeah, I mean, Damian Lillard can carry a team. And he can carry a team in a playoff run, like as in winning playoff series. He's done that before. So I think he can lead a team to win enough to put themselves in position to be at least in the 9 seed for a play-in tournament. I think they're going to be an incredibly tough out. I think the battle between them and Sacramento and the Pelicans is going to be awesome. I actually think we're going to look back, and I know I said this the other day, and I think that group of teams along with Memphis, when the 8 seeding games are done, we're going to go, wow, that group of teams, they were the stars of this thing because of the competitive nature by which they played.
Lo, you weren't with us on Monday when JD was in, but we had this conversation. The odds are out for who gets the 8th seed. Now, Dallas is in 7, and they've got such a lead on the 8th spot, you don't have to worry about it. So it comes down to this. There's Memphis, and they've got a 3.5 game lead on the Kings, the Blazers, and the Pelicans. Those three teams are all 3.5 back. Now, there's 8 games to play in the regular season. If you get within 4 games of the 8th seed, you get a chance to play them in a play-in, but you have to beat them twice in a row where they would only have to win once. So, for example, let's say the season ends, Portland is sitting 2 games back of Memphis, and Zion and the Pelicans are 5 out, and the Kings are five out. Portland and Memphis would play, and if Portland wins that game, because they're the lower seed, they'd play the next night, and Portland would need to win as well. If Memphis wins either of those games, Memphis obviously grabs the eighth seed. If there's multiple teams within four games, it's whoever wins the tiebreaker. They're not going to have a multi-team playoff. So given the fact that Zion's got the best odds, probably because Vegas knows everyone wants to bet him, Portland has the second best odds, and the Kings have the third best odds of overtaking Memphis, who do you see grabbing that eighth seed?
Yeah, believe it or not, I know Dame wants it, but he's got to do a lot. And Nurkic's coming off the leg, and I know they're thinking, okay, he's going to be back. But we just heard BJ. BJ talked about, hey, you can't get in shape that quick. And Dame has to play a lot in order for that team to play great and play well, because he does have to carry. And you got guys coming off injury. I think you got to give it to New Orleans. I think you got to give the edge to New Orleans. New Orleans are young. They can run. They're in great shape. They got a lot. They say Zion's lost more weight. And, you know, look at the other guys that they got on that team. They got some young studs. You know, think about the trade that they did with the Lakers. You know, they got some studs on that team that can play. So I'm going to give them the edge. I think more team collectively. And when they want to, they can play defense. They can rebound. They can play inside and out. So I'm going to give it to New Orleans.
No, I wanted to ask you about this, Lo, because and it goes back to the first comments that Damian Lillard made, because I've been of the belief that in the NBA and even the NFL, once players get into training camp and actually they start, you know, testing guys every day, I feel like in the NBA players are going to follow the rules once they get there. Yeah, is there going to be maybe a little bit of sneak this person in or out? Or I mean, there might be, but I think for the most part, a lot of guys are going to be like Damian Lillard. Maybe they go to the activity rooms and different things that are available. But I think I think once you get everybody together and you show them the importance, I think they will follow the rules. Where do you kind of sit on that?
Oh, without a doubt, JD, you're right. The masses are. I mean, come on, let's just look at it. All he's saying is all Dame and everyone's saying, and even when you heard Stephen A. laughing and joking, he's saying these guys are human. Guess what? We live in a world right now with one of the worst pandemics we've ever seen, and how many people still going to the beach? How many people still aren't wearing masks? Because they're still human. They're still going to do what they want to do in order, even when you say don't do it. So we got to stop looking at these guys they're different than being human. They don't expect. No, some are going to follow and some aren't. But the majority of people usually do the right thing. So you're going to have a guy here do what they're going to do. I get that. But the majority, like Dame said, the majority of people are going to be fine. They're going to follow rules.
Here's what I'd hope. And you can't expect this, but here's what I would hope. Brian Windhorst from ESPN had this story yesterday. The three-month bubble that the NBA is putting in place in Orlando is going to cost $150 million. They're spending $150 million to try to pull this off in 3 months. 22 teams plus support staff at three arenas. They're providing meals, daily testing, medical support, security, and more. The league is expected to lose about $1 billion this year because of what happened with coronavirus. And the players are going to somehow find a way to salvage about $600 million in player salaries, because they're going to play the rest of this regular season, these eight games, and then they're going to go have a playoff run. So there's ways to salvage, but they are dumping $150 million into this. I know everyone is entitled to their own opinions and their own thoughts, and that if you don't feel comfortable being there, you're not going to go. I get all that. The Arizas, the Bertans, Willie Cauley-Steins, I completely understand it. But if you're there, while I'm not saying it should be like the military, like bravo to the NBA for what they're trying to pull off here. They're putting $150 million into this. They've got a health and safety protocol that's over 100 pages. They're really trying everything to pull this off. And yes, it's for money, ultimately. But you know what? It's also for our entertainment. Like, we could use it. If you look around at the news cycle, we could use some entertainment. We really could. And just a round of applause. I know guys are going to make mistakes down there. I don't expect them to be choir boys, but I'm just, every time someone wants to try to knock this stuff down, talk about how stupid it is, talk about how it's going to be a failure, you know what? Just keep it to yourself. Really, just keep that crap to yourself. I don't want to hear it. I want to be positive, and I want to think that, you know what? Maybe these guys will find a way to figure it out, because you know what? I don't think there's going to be a perfect scenario moving forward. I think the reality of the situation is that we are going to have to expect different the key word for the sports landscape over the next 6 months to possibly a year? Different. College football is going to look different. Pro football is going to be different. Hockey, basketball, baseball, and everything in between. You're already seeing it with NASCAR, with golf, and anything else they've rolled out there. It's going to be different. There are going to be issues. There's going to be hiccups. There's going to be problems. So what? So what? Don't hold them to some gold standard. Just applaud them for the fact that they're trying to give you something to watch. I don't care if the games aren't great down there. I don't care if the Orlando games, it's odd because there's no fans. I don't care. I just want to watch some hoops. And I know that there's enough gamers in the NBA, JD, that these guys are going to be putting on a show more often than they won't be.
Yeah, and I still think it comes down for me. And these may be famous last words. I think the NBA is going to be able to pull it off if they can get there. To me, I believe that the next, let's say, week and a half, when everybody's supposed to be ramping up to head there, I think within the next week to 9 days or so, I think getting through the next week and getting everybody in and getting everybody tested to where they can, you know, ramp up and have their training camp, I think that's the critical point, more than even what goes on once they get things rolling. I think once everybody gets in there and gets comfortable with the protocol and gets comfortable with the routine, I actually have a high confidence level that they're able to pull this thing off. I really do.
So you're seeing it. The big obstacle is just getting there.
Yes.
Getting situated, staying clean, because this is the MLS problem right now. That Dallas team showed up. They've got 10 positive tests in the Orlando bubble. They're already a mess.
And I also think we're going to see within the next week to 10 days, I think we're going to see a lot of media pressure from the outside as to should they even be doing it. Cases are up again. Is it worth it? I think there's going to be a lot of pressure applied for Adam Silver and for the Players Association to continue to come out as they've basically done every single day since they released the schedule a week ago. Yeah. They've come out and said, no, we're doing it. We're doing it. We're doing it. Like, they have every day put out, promotion that says we are going to try to pull this off. And I think it's important because, again, if you just read the room and watch the news or you're reading articles, there is a significant portion of the population and the media also that says this shouldn't be happening right now, but yet the NBA continues to push through. I think getting across that finish line to where you get everybody there is the most important part, and get through those first 3 or 4 days of testing everybody and letting everybody figure out the routine. If we're sitting here, let's say 11 days from now on the 12th, and everybody's been there, let's say for a weekend to 4 days, and there's a couple of tests, but people are in quarantine, they're working their way back up to get this thing started, I think we're good. If there's major problems, those major problems to me are going to happen in that 10-day span, which could jeopardize the whole thing.
It feels like there are there are people in sports media who are actively rooting against this stuff. So you're talking about some of the media that's going to be barreling down on Adam Silver. Why? Why? If you're sports media, why? We need this. We want this. This is what we do for a living. I'd love to talk about games. Don't get me wrong. I'm having fun with the conversations now. Very fortunate to do what we do. And very fortunate to have the listeners that we have who are rolling with us through all of this, even though there's no games. But the bottom line is we all want games. I'm not going to root against them. I'm going to root that the NBA is smarter than our current politicians, that they can put together a better plan than America did. And that maybe if it works, we can look to them and say, huh, look at what the NBA did. Maybe we could learn a thing or two. Maybe Major League Baseball, despite every single step that Rob Manfred seems to take, might have something we can learn from. I'd rather err on the side of rooting for it and then getting depressed it doesn't work than rooting against it. There are too many people rooting against all this stuff, Lo.
Oh, no question. I'm with you. Same church, and we're sitting on the same brew. I think that you got to look at this thing and also understand that, without a doubt, Joe, that these trainers have been talking to these players 3 to 4 weeks ago and saying, here's what you need to be taking. And when they get there, you don't think they're going to have seminars and sit down. Every year, all that stuff always happens. They're always going to do that if something's going on and when there's a health pandemic or whatever it may be. They take extra precaution. They already are pumping these guys with probably vitamin D, all the things that they feel that can help your immune system. You don't think that trainers and everything, especially in football and the big three, that they have implemented already? You don't think, you know, we should get a trainer on? I guarantee you these guys are already taking certain things, certain vitamins, certain things to help their immune system without a doubt. They're trying because they want this to be successful. So I'm pulling for the NBA. I think everyone is. Well, not everyone. We know that. But I know the majority of people are pulling that this thing is a success.
All right, let's go to the phones. He's a World Series champ, 16-year MLB veteran. Check him out now, Dodgers pre- and post-game analyst for Sportsnet LA, Jerry Hairston Jr., kind enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Jerry, I'm going to try something completely different. Rather than have a conversation with a baseball guy about all the problems with baseball and all the problems with the country and the world regarding this pandemic, I'm going to start with this. I'm actually going to fire a baseball question your way. 60-game season, I'm of the belief that we have more of a chance this year than ever before to see some real surprises, some real long shots. Are there any teams out there that aren't getting a lot of love that you think could make a run at this thing and surprise some people? I'll throw a few names your way that I've been considering. The Cincinnati Reds, the Chicago White Sox, the Toronto Blue Jays. What are you thinking?
I can see the White Sox making a run at this. But there's a team that you didn't mention that I think has a legitimate shot not only to win the division. I don't think they will, but they have a shot. But also, if they get hot, can win the whole thing. That's the Tampa Bay Rays.
Ooh.
If you look at their team, Kevin Cash has done an incredible job with them. They pitch the ball extremely well. They have really good defense, and they can swing the bat. Now, they don't get a whole lot of fanfare because they're in the AL East, and the Yankees and the Red Sox perennially, if I could say that word in the morning. they've always been at the top for quite some time now. But the Rays have everything you need to win. And if they get hot, they have as good a chance as anybody to make a serious run at this thing.
I'm interested how pitching is going to be used, and maybe the Rays are in perfect alignment because they, you know, will use an opener, and they've, you know, got guys that'll come in and pitch through the lineup one time, and then they've got a good bullpen. But what do you think the template is going to be in terms of pitching? Because it feels like we're just going to see a lot of games where a lot of pitchers are just going 2-3 innings at a time until you get into some of the more traditional, you know, bullpen type roles. And oh, by the way, now there's the three batter rule where a reliever's going to have to face, you know, three in a row.
You know, that's a great question. And this is where, you know, knowing your team, knowing your staff and communication with your pitching coach, these managers are going to have to really manage. Now, they don't have to worry about the National League managers. They don't have to worry about, you know, double switching anymore because the DH will be in effect. So they have to make sure that these guys build up their starters. Now, the first couple outings, let's say a guy like a David Price or Clayton Kershaw, you know, a little older, do you extend them? Do they go longer than 4 or 5 innings? You know, you really have to make sure you manage your pitching staff wisely and make sure you manage your bullpen wisely because the first 3 to 4 weeks are going to be very crucial. These guys haven't pitched competitively in a big league game for about 10 to 16 months, depending on who the pitcher is. So pitching is going to be very important. And I'm looking at the Dodgers. They have not only a deep rotation, but they got a pretty deep bullpen as well. So I think the Dodgers, I mentioned the Rays, the Washington Nationals, too, the defending champion Washington Nationals, also are really good in the pitching department. So those type of teams, when you have deep pitching, you definitely have a chance, especially in this shortened season.
With this shortened season we're talking about, you know, they usually say that the pitchers start off ahead usually of the hitting, but do you think it changes dynamics like you just spoke about pitchers having, you know, had seen a lot of action lately? So is it going to kind of favor the hitting earlier this year, or is it just kind of up in the air how this thing's going to pan out?
You know, traditionally, pitching always comes to the forefront early. Because hitting is timing, and you need reps. You need to have timing. And a lot of these hitters haven't hit for quite some time. So I think the first couple of weeks you're going to see pitching be ahead of the hitters. Then make no mistake about it. Guys like Lindor, Cody Bellinger, Mike Trout, these guys pick up pretty quickly. So they'll make the adjustment. But, again, pitching has always been at the forefront of this game. Dominant pitching, power pitching has always been at the forefront of this game. And if you look at the teams that have that power pitching, you look at the Yankees with Cole, you look at the Nationals with Strasburg and Scherzer, and the Dodgers with Buehler, Kershaw, and now David Price, those teams definitely have an advantage.
Jerry Hairston Jr. joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Jerry, you come from one of the great baseball families. You spent a lot of time in the league. Your family members that spent a lot of time in the league. The guys you talk to now, how confident are they in Major League Baseball's ability to pull this thing off?
I think they're very confident. I think the best thing that ever happened, it happened about 10 days ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, when the Philadelphia Phillies, when they found out that there was a little bit of a mini outbreak at their spring training facility, and they kind of shut that down and made sure that, you know what, we really need to make sure we nip this in the bud the best we can. So now testing is widely available. They're able to make sure that, hey, before you enter our facility, before you enter our building, we're going to make sure everybody is tested. And if you do test for coronavirus, you have to be quarantined for 10 days, 2 weeks. And make sure you keep this at a minimum. Guys, there's going to be positive tests. And just talking to some health officials, talking to some players, you know, it's good to have that in place to make sure that if you're positive, you may be asymptomatic. But you make sure you keep the staff safe. A lot of these staff members, coaching staff, medical staff, are 45, 55, 60 years of age. And those are the guys that you have to really look after. So I think that the teams have done an excellent job of making sure they ramped up the testing. And they're prepared for, obviously, you know, this pandemic is something we've never dealt with before. But I think now they're better equipped to handle it than, let's say, they were in March and April.
Jerry, the Giants out here find themselves in a unique position. New manager, they're a rebuilding team, but a lot of the young players that are part of the future are not going to be ready to play in 2020, and there's still a lot of the veterans around from the championship days. All of that being said, Yasiel Puig is out there and available. He's been an arch nemesis of this franchise for a number of years, obviously playing for the Dodgers among other teams. Do you see Yasiel Puig as a fit with the San Francisco Giants?
As much as it pains me to say this, you know, for him being a former Dodger, I think he's a great fit over there. You know, he'll bring that team energy. He'll bring substance, too. You know, a lot of the flair that he has in his game, that excitement, and he can be a little adventurous on the base pass. I think a team like the Giants need something like that. They need energy on that team, a little bit of youth. He's still young. He's got power, great outfield arm, and I think he would be a pretty good fit with the Giants. And Farhan knows him very, very well, and I think the Giants and maybe the Rockies might be another team that Yasiel Puig might recruit.
Is there, you know, in football, there's this old saying that we say, you know, we're playing, and it said, we say, if all things being equal, players are going to make plays, but coaches make decisions to help determine the outcomes of games. In baseball, is that true? And if so, who's some of the skippers that you think are going to be in that position, especially with this type of season?
That's a great question. I think in baseball, you have to put your players in positions to succeed. Like in football, it's about scheming, right? Calling plays, making sure you anticipate the defense and call a certain play to kind of combat that. In baseball, you got to know your team. You got to know your players. Is this hitter more comfortable hitting in the two hole? Or is he more suitable hitting in the six or seven hole? Those are the type of decisions you have to know your players on the comfort level. That being said, I always love experienced managers, Joe Maddon, Dusty Baker, in these type of situations because these guys basically have seen it all. Now, we're dealing with something that nobody's dealt with as far as this pandemic, this shortened 60-game season. So I look at Bud Black. I look at Dave Roberts. Even though he's managed, five, 6 years now, he's gained so much knowledge and experience of managing in the postseason so many years. So those are the type of managers I look to, and they'll be able to adjust on the fly as the season's happening.
He's a World Series champ and a 16-year Major League Baseball veteran. Check him out now, Dodgers pre- and post-game, Sportsnet LA, Jerry Hairston Jr. with us on 95.7 The Game. Jerry, we always appreciate the time, man. You always knock it out of the park, pun intended, even though it was a terrible one. Have a great holiday weekend.
Thanks, guys. You guys stay safe.
All right, so get this. We haven't even talked about this today. Niner fans, I got some bad news for you. Antonio Brown throwing with Lamar Jackson during these private workouts, that's not the only quarterback he's flirting with. We got the answer for you on who he's dealing with now. It's going to be a problem. It's coming up next on 95.7 The Game. But, ooh, almost blew it and got in trouble behind the scenes. Thank you. I'd like to thank my wife for being so supportive. What's coming up on The Game is brought to you by our friends at Chilton Auto Body. Chilton Auto Body is open to serve the Bay Area with contact-free auto body repair options along with free pickup and delivery. Chilton Auto Body now offers virtual estimates and curbside contact-free service from the comfort of your vehicle. Book an appointment today at ChiltonAutobody.com.
Now back to Joe Lowendibs.
Well, think about it. I don't understand it.
On 95.7, The Game.
Yes, love this music. Back to the Future versus Independence Day. Both were released on 4th of July weekend. Which was the better movie? Which was the bigger movie in your opinion? You can call us if you want, 888-957-9570, or you can hit us up on the Chilton Auto Body text line, which is also 888-957-9570. Today's show, as always, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Low, tell me something. If I'm a Niner fan, how concerned should I be that A, I found out Antonio Brown was working out with Lamar Jackson in Miami. B, found out Tom Brady and the Buccaneers are still interested in pursuing Antonio Brown. And now C, video surfacing on Antonio Brown's Instagram page that this week he's in San Diego working out with Russell Wilson. It's all over AB's page. He had a quote on one of his posts as well. Who would like to see this on Sundays? I'd imagine Russ just isn't there because Brown said he needed someone to throw him a few passes, so Russell Wilson decided to take a flight to help the guy out. He's clearly there scouting him, interviewing him, and getting to know him. What do you make of this? If you're a Niner fan, you can't feel good, right?
Trouble. Where's Jimmy G? This is where I pick up the phone. I'm like, all right, Jimmy, make that call. All right, guys, and all these guys that know Antonio Brown, you reach out. You talk to him. And you just say, hey, man, hope you know, don't make any hesitant decisions, any, you know, just gut reactions. Just take your time. Hey, you can go to Seattle, but you know what? Does that guarantee a Super Bowl? If you come here, you know what we have here, our defense, our offense. You would be a mainstay. So I think that you look at this guy now, and I really believe he's going to play this year, Joe. I just don't know how long the suspension's going to be. But there's going to be a team that's going to take a chance. And here's the thing. I wouldn't be so quick to jump out there and say that. But the reason why I'm saying it now is because you got too many quarterbacks that want him on his squad. You see what I'm saying? And that's why I think that the Niners are doing a huge where they should be doing something where Jimmy G just takes initiative and just call him, say, hey, AB, let's go throw some passes. Hey, can you come out here? Because now, when you're doing that now you're showing the organization that you're interested. So when you hear Tom Brady pulling for him, now you get Russ Wilson, you got Lamar Jackson. So when those guys are starting to do those things, there's Mets making the coach and management look more serious at that individual. And if the quarterback's saying, I can handle him, we can do this, that sounds trouble for me for the San Francisco 49ers because you're now looking at Russell Wilson saying, I'm endorsing this guy. I'm going to vouch for his character.
JD, jump in on this. Lowe makes an interesting point. Should Jimmy Garoppolo be trying to get a workout in with Antonio Brown to do a little investigative journalism, so to speak, a little investigative reporting?
You know, I don't think so. Look, if I'm the 49ers, it really is tough because I wouldn't want him at all if I'm the 49ers. But the tricky part is exactly what if he goes to a team that could, because he's on their roster, prevent you from, you know, winning a Super Bowl or making a Super Bowl or even winning a division. I personally wouldn't want, and I don't think the 49ers want, Antonio Brown, you know, to come in and then be suspended and then, you know, who knows how he's going to act during the suspension and what things he's going to say before he ultimately comes back. Like, to me, it's a hassle. It's a distraction. I wouldn't want any part of it, Low. But you also run the risk of, what if he goes to Seattle and what if he goes to Baltimore? But I still don't think that's a reason to get him. Like, you don't get him just because you don't want somebody else to get them.
I understand that, JD, but I'm asking you, just looking at this team. Manuel Sanders, he left. Newsflash, he's not in the building. He's in New Orleans. New Orleans got better at receivers. Now look at those two, that pair of receivers they have there. Okay, now you, who was going to be your number one? Was it going to be Debo? Your number one, newsflash, he's out. Probably won't be playing the first couple weeks. And when he comes back, he is not. You look at KD. Look at all these lists. Look how many people, how long it takes those guys. This year is going to be tough for him. He's always going to be in pain. It's going to be hard to fight through it. Do you think this 49er team can win a Super Bowl with not having a true number one or even a true number two? Do you think they have a number two on their roster? Because right now, Debo is not a one or a two. If you think that answer is yes, then don't get it. But I don't see that.
I think the answer is probably no. It's an unknown at this point, but that doesn't mean that he's the guy that you have to attempt to go get. Like, the answer can be an unknown. And look, Joe, I think it's an unknown. Like, I think the 49ers are in a holding pattern. I think they actually went into it in a similar fashion as to the way last year played out. Debo Samuel's going to have an increased role. Brandon Ayuk is going to come in and offset some of what you lost from Emmanuel Sanders. Jalen Hurd and Trent Taylor are going to be in the mix somewhere. And, oh, by the way, if we get to the middle of the season and we need to add a vet, we'll try to add a vet. Now, I don't think they want to end up giving up two picks to get a guy like they did with Emmanuel Sanders and deplete their future haul and their stockpile, if you will. But I also think they look at it almost like a baseball team does. Get to the deadline. If we don't have what we need, we'll figure out a way to get what we need to put us over the top. I think they want to keep that flexibility, Joe, and saying Antonio Brown has to be the guy just because you think you're a little thin at that position, I just don't think that's the answer.
Let's take a look at the evidence we have in front of us. We know Antonio Brown can play, and from all the video we've seen, he's clearly in shape. And from everyone we've talked to, he's in shape. So the issue comes down to the same thing it's come down to from the beginning, whether or not he's going to be a problem from a character perspective. Excuse me. Does not look like finances are going to be a concern. He should be relatively cheap, and it looks like he can play. Do you have a need? Yes. Debo getting hurt, Richie James Jr. getting hurt, Emmanuel Sanders leaving in free agency. That creates a need. Let's look at the teams that are rumored to be interested, right? Brown's cousin is Hollywood Brown of the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore's on the cusp. On the cusp. And they know they've got to strike now because once they pay Lamar, that's it. That's it. Once they pay him $40 million a year, that's going to be the end. They're not going to be able to pay everybody else. You got to strike while you have the franchise quarterback on his rookie deal. So they know they can get over the top. They've been working him out in Miami. They're probably waiting to see what Goodell does. Russell Wilson is clearly doing the same thing. He's not getting younger. Pete Carroll's not getting younger. They're going to try to make a splash. They could use help with him paired up next to Lockett and Metcalf. They know they don't have the Legion of Boom. They're going to have to do it offensively. So they're working him out. And they haven't signed him yet because they want to see what Goodell wants to do. Tom Brady has made it very clear he wants him as well. Now, we got three first-class quarterbacks on three contenders that want this guy. It's not as if Cincinnati's working him out, Detroit's working him out, Miami's working him out. It's three really good teams with quarterbacks who are going through the routine with him. And then we have the Niners who aren't doing it. And all the while, for at least a year, we've been talking about how the Niners say culture is king. The players, the makeup of that locker room is important. That's something that has helped contribute to their success. So if they have identified this guy as an individual they don't want to put in that locker room, do we really think they're making that big of a mistake, given the fact that in 3 years' time, they went from embarrassment to NFC champion? That's what I look at. I'm with Lowe in that I want to see them sign him because I think he puts them over the top. And I think if it doesn't work out, you can just cut him and it's not going to hurt you financially. And I think the locker room can rebound from that sort of thing. But I also realize that if you trust these guys and they don't want to work him out and they don't want to make the signing, there's a good reason for it. And they've made some pretty good decisions. And as I'm saying that, I know there are people driving around going, Reuben Foster, Solomon Thomas, what about this and that? Yeah. What about some of the other decisions? They made some really, really good decisions as well, okay? Some really good decisions. They've made more good decisions than bad decisions, which is why the organization was in the Super Bowl last year. So my final word on this is essentially, If you want to take the risk of not signing him and he ends up with Seattle, I got your back because you've done a great job building this team up, and I'm sure there's good reason. These guys were talking about making a move for Tom Brady when they had Jimmy Garoppolo. They've clearly had the discussion. If Garoppolo's not working him out, then there's a reason for it, I'd say.
Yeah, let me tell you guys something.
Go ahead, Bo.
All right. I'll put it this way. I totally understand what you're saying, Joe, and you're right. I trust these guys, and here's what I John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, they don't want to make the wrong decision, mess with the locker room. Like you said, it wouldn't, because if he didn't work out, they can cut him, the locker room would be fine. But it goes to show you, too, that maybe, you know what, are they going to win at all costs? And they're showing you, no, they won't do that. Because I'm going to tell you right now, they don't get him. They don't beat Arizona. It's 8 points for game week one. They're not going to beat Arizona week one. I'll tell you something else. They won't go to the NFC championship. They will not be in the NFC championship if they don't get that type of receiver or that type of player. It ain't going to happen. I know that because you lost Buckner. And the rookie, I'm going to tell you, he's going to play well. He's going to help. You lost. You lost a big-time receiver, and now your number two guy who's going to be number one, you don't have him. I'm not comfortable. I'm willing to say right now, even though I'm just telling you, if you don't have that type of guy, you're probably going to lose that first game against Arizona, and you're not going to be in the NFC championship. You'll get in the playoffs. You will not make it to the NFC championship.
JD, last word.
I think, and this is where I wanted to bring it back to, I feel like it would work better in Seattle. I don't know about Baltimore, but for some reason, I feel like Seattle can handle it. Or he would be on his better behavior, or they're better at dealing with chaos. The 49ers have just been so averse bringing in that type of personality that I don't know. I feel like it makes a lot more sense for Seattle or Baltimore than it does for San Francisco, and unfortunately that might put the Niners behind the eight ball when it's all said and done.
All right, so let's bring in another voice. Hall of Famer Warren Moon on the other side. It's Joe Lowe and John Dickinson here on 95.7 The Game. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, 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 O'Reilly.